When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt. Our colleague Noel is not here today, but will be returning shortly.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul, Mission Control, Deccant. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. That makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. Matt, off air, we were joking just a second ago about intros to episodes, about intros to the show, and this one, I totally ripped off Star Trek, just because that beginning monologue of the original Star Trek is so good. Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of our odd little podcast, its continuing mission to explore strange new ideas, to seek out new life and new civilization, to boldly go where no conspiracy realist has gone before, etc., etc. We both love space. We both went to space camp.
Yeah, we did.
Thoroughly enjoyed that. I guess it is propaganda, but not all propaganda is bad.
Well, come on. We learned how the space shuttles work inside and out, baby. Come on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had our little logbooks.
Yeah.
We did our little experiments, you know?
Dude, space camp was the jam. If you don't like space camp, get out of here.
Yeah.
Just get out.
Just go. Don't say anything. Don't write an email. Just go somewhere. So it's nuts because, you know, we've talked about this in previous episodes on things like the militarization of space, things like conspiracy theories about the moon landing. And the truth is that tonight, if you look up to the sky, regardless of the amount of light pollution that is in your area, your neck of the global woods, what you're seeing is increasingly a battlefield in the making, a possible new dimension of war. You see, folks, if you tuned into one of our recent strange news segments, then you probably have heard that a lot of people, a lot of countries and companies are resurrecting the Cold War space race. As we record this evening, the space race is back on, baby. And there are a lot more players in the game. It's not just us playing Starfield, though, Matt, I will confess to you that I did, as you know, I work on reward mechanisms. I did start playing Starfield.
Well, you must have done a lot of hard work to get there, buddy. I can't wait to see your character.
Oh, I think that's very kind of you to say. It's not super creative. Of course, he's Max Powers, astronaut with a secret.
Oh, yeah.
But here are the facts. Now, Matt, you and I and Paul and Noel and Doc Holliday, we all grew up in the United States. So we were very familiar with the shadow of the space race, which was a very Cold War type thing. I was looking back on the timeline, just the broad strokes. It was kind of a one-on-one grudge match between the United States and the USSR.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, those two superpowers, very powerful countries, right? Organizations of large swaths of land that have a bunch of moving parts within them, you know, states, like almost like mini countries. They're all together in their own little sectors. And after World War II, when they're victorious and they've got all this war that they've been doing with all of, you know, we call them toys, but, you know, all this might, military might that they built up and were victorious. It's like looking at the treasure deep within the cave, and both teams are in there and they both see the treasure and they're like, well, which one of us gets the treasure? Is it going to be you or me? Well, I don't know. Let's build spaceships and whoever can get to the moon first wins. Or rather, whoever can control space as, you know, land, air, and sea, now space, you win.
Yeah, very well put, man. I love that you're pointing out that race that began the instant World War II ended. The Russians and the Americans were stealing Nazi scientists left and right. And as soon as the world knew about nuclear weapons, both of these countries scrambled like mad to build as many ballistic missile-based nukes as possible. And that research naturally led to the exploration of space. Both countries wanted to be the supreme power in orbit, and they
ultimately, it was rocketry, right?
It absolutely.
How to send a nuke far away into enemy territory. Well, what if we just shot it more up?
Yeah, I shot an arrow in the air, as the old Twilight Zone episode goes. And this idea was sold to each public of that country as, or that respective country, as a noble greater good mission, the ultimate destiny of man, manifest destiny, in fact, in space. But really, you know, when this became a battle of conflicting ideologies, Uncle Sam was no longer just the United States. The USSR was no longer just Soviet Russia. One was the idea of capitalism. The other was the idea of communism. And they created a feedback loop with their dueling research. They were spurring each other on, egging each other on to go further and further and further. I think, you know, we all know the pivotal moments. One of the biggest ones was the launch of Sputnik, which I did not know this because my Russian is for crap, but Sputnik means traveler, apparently.
Oh, yeah. That's perfect. Because ultimately, it's a satellite. Mm. It's going to travel around through space just above us, just hanging out up there. And the way they got it up there is through that old rocketry stuff, an intercontinental ballistic missile that they shot up in 1957. It was October 4th, 1957, that the USSR launched, a ballistic missile and sent the Traveler, aka Sputnik, up there. And it really was the first satellite that human beings had created and successfully gotten into orbit.
Mm-hmm. And as we record, we're just a few days away from the 66th anniversary of Sputnik's launch. When this happened, because you can't hide a satellite, really, when this happened, America was pissed and terrified.
Yeah.
Because to your point about rockets, right? And nukes.
A, rockets, yes. And it was a really good one to make it all the way up there. And two, there's something up there now that we have no way to access. It's just up in space. What's it doing up there, man?
Mm-hmm. And how many rockets do the Soviets possess? What if they decided, hey, it's easier to hit DC than it is to hit low Earth orbit? Yeah. And this means that, quote unquote, beating the Soviet forces became a number one priority for the United States because the U.S. saw this as an existential threat. You can see it in the timeline. Just 1 year after Sputnik launches, the U.S. launches its own satellite, designed, of course, by Wernher von Braun. And Then Eisenhower, in the same year, 1958, creates NASA. These are wild times. This is one of those times that defense contractors love because the pocketbook is open.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. I'm over here just having a moment because I'm realizing my father is only 7 years older than Sputnik. And just thinking that satellites have only been a thing for 66 years, though it feels, again, like much of our newer technology, like it's just been around forever because we've built so much of our infrastructure, our daily lives on the technology that's not old at all. Well, and it also makes you realize that NASA isn't old at all. Like the major space corporations that work together with countries have only been doing it for 60 something years.
Yeah. Yeah. They've been making a lot of progress too. It's nuts that now we, how sci-fi is this? Now we can refer to the old space race.
Yeah.
Like the Cold War thing was the old race. It was full of glory, conspiracy aplenty, tragedy, heartbreak. Innocent people died. The end of the old space race is generally considered to be the U.S. moon landings. And the U.S. was almost not the first to the finish line there. The Soviet government made four different failed attempts to launch their own lunar craft between like 1969 to 1972. There was even an explosion on a launch pad. Ugly stuff.
Ugly stuff, but there are also some really fun conspiracies rolling around out there about how the Soviet Union was super successful, but they projected that they were unsuccessful, and then they built bases already on the dark side of the moon. Oh, mm-hmm. You'd really sink your teeth into that stuff. Can't really prove much of anything about it, really anything at all, but it is super fun to think about.
Yeah, we can't prove it yet, but also I do want to give a very light spoiler, low-key shout out to a project, Matt, that you have been working on with our pals Dan Bush and Nick Tikoski called The Passage. I was immensely fortunate to be able to write a little bit for that one, which touches on space races in a very weird way, I think.
Oh, wait, which episode did you do?
Hoover.
Oh, man. That's awesome. I haven't heard the rough cut yet, but you, everybody, if you're listening, you're going to love this show. Oh my gosh. Not just because Ben wrote part of it. It's really good.
And that means a lot, man. Thank you. I can't wait to hear it as well. You guys know we love creepy stories. We love world building and fiction. So stay tuned sometime next year and walk through the passage with us. It's an all-star cast. You got a lot of firepower on that team, Matt. And when you look at the conclusion of the space race, usually you're going to see people say it ended when Americans landed on the moon. The U.S. government lost interest in lunar missions. They slowly waned after the early 1970s. And then there was a armistice of sorts when the Apollo Soyuz mission sent three U.S. astronauts into space on an Apollo craft that docked in orbit with a Soyuz vehicle. The commanders of the two craft, one U.S. national, one Soviet national, they met, they shook hands in space, and this was the end of the rivalry. It was a new era of cooperation. Awesome. Go yeah. team. It worked for a second.
Yeah. Yeah, it did. What a wonderful vision of the future, right? You can't get much more future than that. Some astronauts shaking hands in space. Come on. Amazing.
But.
The big problem is it's almost like that happened. That moment happened in 1975. Then what happened to everybody's interest in space?
Oh, yeah.
No, really? Not everybody, because I think there was still a public fascination with space when it comes to our popular television and the films that were being created, to even interest in extraterrestrials. Popularly, the human mind is all about some space, but governments, it seems, had a real cooling off period there, maybe a refractory period.
There we go. Nice. However, while this public attention kind of decreased over the intervening decades, make no mistake, World powers, both countries and corporations, never stopped planning for space exploration. And the first things they really thought about in their smoky back rooms were things like command and control of that, of near Earth orbit, force projection, being able to prevent activity from rival powers. And people just kept launching satellites, you know, like if you've ever driven by a house where people just keep putting little yard gnomes in the front yard and little sculptures and stuff, that is Earth. That is what Earthlings did.
But they aren't doing it publicly anymore.
No,
that's the thing that I think I kind of got it wrong when I said they're not interested there. But what I meant was, if you're a citizen of any of these countries, you probably don't even notice that anything is happening with the space race. Before, it was all about being in the public eye. Any and all maneuvering that's occurring on any side, either side, is going to be a newspaper article, right? Front page. The Soviets did this, or the Americans did that. And now it's almost like a press release might go out and it would say like several satellites or several things were put into orbit today on behalf of X corporation or something.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it.
Yeah, that's exactly what happens. You know, now the propaganda machine has moved on to focus on other things, but the actual work, both the military work and the pure science, continues. There are so many amazing experiments that have been done in space. While we talked about this previously, while launching missions into outer space can seem like a misuse of resources, the fact of the matter is, thousands of people are employed by these activities, right? Hundreds of thousands. And the science learned through space exploration has very real-world valuable applications here on the ground.
Like preventing a giant space body from impacting the planet and destroying a lot of us, or most of us, if not all of us.
Mm-hmm. And then Tang and Velcro. I'm kind of joking.
Well, I mean, serious with that, the new, we've talked about one of the new things, and we're probably going to mention it again later in today's episode, but there's brand new news coming out right now about how a mission went up and got, basically, it's not a soil sample, it's a rock and debris sample from a comet or from a space body that is flying through the air that may impact the Earth in like 150 years. And this mission might actually help us prevent it.
Yeah. And that's something that everyone on the planet should agree with, right? Because a large catastrophic body from outer space hitting Earth, it's not going to check your zip code. It's not going to check who you voted for. It's just going to say, let's do the dinosaur thing again.
Yeah. Enjoy this 40-foot wall of water. Let's see what happens.
Yeah. And so it should be no surprise that as of this month, a great website called Orbiting Now lists a total of 8,705 different active satellites in various Earth orbits.
My God.
A lot of stuff. A lot of garden gnomes. You know what I mean? We might be the trashy house in the neighborhood. This number is going to increase over time up to a certain point. And eventually, the massive amount of stuff out there is going to be a serious problem. However, tomorrow is not today. Today, there is a new space race. It includes multiple countries, billions of dollars, several billionaires, and breathtaking new technology. Sounds super cool. You might be surprised that some folks are very, very concerned about this. They're staying awake at night, worried, because they're wondering how far a space race can go before it becomes a space war.
Space war. Coming up next on Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. We'll be right back.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel.
Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
So tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Here's where it gets crazy. It's true. A space race could become a space war, and very easily. It is frightening. But to explain that, we need to learn a little bit more about this new space race. Matt, you and I spoke recently about the Indian lunar lander that did something no one has done before, unless the Russian conspiracy theories are true.
Exactly. It went to the South Pole of the moon. It's awesome. That's a place where scientists have been wanting to land for a long time, approximately, let's say, 66 years. No, I mean, but since we've been fascinated by the moon, and India did it. It's the Indian Space Research Organization. They landed a, I think this is how you say it, Chandrayaan-3 probe.
Mm-hmm.
And isn't this the first moon mission that India has successfully completed?
Yes.
So, and like, what
very
a first,
difficult one.
Yeah, exactly. What a first go. My goodness.
Yeah. Let's also keep in mind that several other countries tried this before. Brilliant people. We're talking top minds in Japan, in Israel, and Russia. Also, Russia had around the same time, pretty recently, launched the Luna 25 spacecraft, and it crashed to the surface of the moon just a few days before India landed successfully. This is not a ding on any of those engineers, physicists, or scientists. It is just incredibly difficult to do this.
Yeah, it really is. Well, and again, it's another reason. Well, you tell me, Ben. I think the reason NASA and the United States are headed back to the moon is because other people are headed back to the moon as well. I think it's kind of the same thing that was happening before. It really is just happening now. That's why the Artemis mission is a go.
Yes, NASA is preparing the Artemis mission to return to the moon. You might also be surprised to learn that countries like Saudi Arabia and Luxembourg, that's a real dark horse, have also decided they're going to do moon missions. In short, as you said, Matt, a ton of stuff is happening, but this new space race is different in several key ways. First, lower cost. Economy of scale. You know what I mean? You don't have to love Elon Musk, but SpaceX and its reusable rockets are a big factor in this. Also, satellites are getting smaller and smaller every year, which makes them cheaper and cheaper to launch into space.
Oh, yeah. I got a little lost there in the Artemis mission. Go to nasa.gov/specials/Artemis. That's A-R-T-E-M-I-S to learn more. It's fascinating.
It's so cool.
Dude, there's a whole section in there about the how it's going to make a ton of money.
Ah, yes. Yeah, because there are higher stakes, but also the technological and geopolitical giants of the world as it stands today have learned things their predecessors did not know. Water has been found on the moon. Rare earth metals, or just rare metals, I guess we can call them now,
have and also gases. And gases.
Yeah, we'll get to the gas one too. You should get gassed up about that, folks. The nation of China and the nation of the U.S. have both also demonstrated their ability to destroy satellites with missiles launched from Earth. And look, there are more players in the game. That's another key difference. Right now, the big three are the U.S., China, and Russia. But more than 80 different countries have a presence in space. You might be surprised to learn the United Arab Emirates sent a probe to Mars. We were surprised to learn that.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Well, and I think people often overlook that Israel did. They planned a moon mission. It didn't go the way they wanted. It crashed on the moon, but they still did it. And there are countries that you don't think about every day that want to have a stake in this game.
Yeah. And they're not doing it just for the soft power of hearts and minds.
No.
Let's be very clear about that. You know, also private companies are a huge deal in this now. And we're not talking about your, you know, mom and pop defense contractors here in the West. Government funding is still the biggest source of revenue overall, but it's occurring in step with investment from private enterprise. And that piece of the puzzle is growing at a rapid rate. Like, I think it was a decade ago in the U.S., the private sector was spending overall about $1 billion on R&D for space exploration. Now that number, just 10 years later, is between $5 and $6 billion. For-profit companies don't do stuff for the warm and fuzzies. They have quarterly profit expectations. They have five-year plans. They're doing this as an investment. And that's where you start having to, you know, walk through the calculations yourself, right? These private entities are working with all of the big state-run space orgs, and the risks are incredibly high. You know, it is terrifyingly easy to crash a very expensive lander on the moon and never get it back.
Yeah.
Profits, though, you know what I mean?
And so much data. My goodness. Well, I guess let's get to the gas bin. Helium-3. This is an important thing. This is something. It's something the world needs, and not just for party balloons. It's up there. It's on the moon. And if you could mine that stuff, if you could capture it, let's say, really well, and actually get it back to Earth for our purposes, woo, you're going to be in the money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you'll quite possibly be beyond money at a certain point, because we have to realize there's a hidden hand to all this noble talk about humanity reaching the stars. The Cold War space race had different goals. It was all about getting the public in both of those countries to agree to this highfalutin idea of exploring for the betterment of humanity. Because if they said we're spending billions to invent new ways to blow stuff up,
yeah,
it wouldn't have been as popular.
It's defense spending by way of inspiration and propaganda.
And now there's a little bit more transparency about it, because it's tougher to keep these things secret. You are absolutely right. The Helium-3, it's nuts. On Earth, there's only about, I think it's 0.0001% of helium on this planet is helium-3. But on the moon, there might be a million tons plus of this stuff. And helium-3 is like the holy grail of nuclear fusion, because it can produce higher amounts of energy than nuclear fission. And it's also way less radioactive. So finding these deposits, if you could somehow get a hold of this stuff, right, and either use it in manufacturing on the moon or ship it back to Earth, which is pretty ambitious, then you are officially king of the hill.
Oh, man. Yes, absolutely. I have to give you just a quick example from my Minecraft life with my son. So we will often build, so we'll play together, right? Two players. Mm-hmm. One mm-hmm. player is in survival. They're at the whims of the game itself, the enemies, all the things you got to deal with. You got to eat food and you got to survive, right? The other player is in creative and will create a scenario for the other player. So we go back and forth, right? Mm-hmm. And in that, if I'm the one in the creative seat, I will put little pockets of resources for him to discover and find that he can use on his survival journey, right? He does the same thing for me.
Cool.
I'm imagining somebody places the moon where it is, chock full of rare earth minerals that you need to build the technology, chock full of helium-3 that you need to run fusion energy for all the brand new tech that you're going to build from all the rare earth minerals you find. Mm-hmm. It's like somebody gave us a little I don't know. It's almost like a stepping stone to the stars. I'm kidding. I don't think a creator actually did that. And that's not my opinion, but that's an interesting thought, isn't it?
That is a fascinating thought. My mind's going a million different directions on that one. Yeah. I mean, this is what fiction has always dreamt of, right? This is the end goal of humanity, establishing outposts beyond the bounds of Earth. And if you can make a little money on the way, you got way more people interested immediately. There's also evidence of metal oxides in some of the larger craters of the moon. Experts currently believe the moon has reserves of silicon, titanium, aluminum, all the hits. And there was a line that stood out to us from the chief scientist in China's lunar exploration, Ouyang Zhiyuan, says that harvesting helium-3 could, quote, solve humanity's energy demand for around 10,000 years. So if everyone can cooperate, things will be pretty cool.
I'm telling you, man, it's a little convenient that it's just floating around above us and we've all been looking at it for thousands and thousands of years, mm-hmm. trying to get there.
Hmm. Mm. I love that idea. I always love in fiction. I love the idea of some ancient force that is extraterrestrial or whatever, and you never directly meet it, but you find little things it's left for you. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? A wormhole, a warp engine, yeah. ton of helium-3.
Yeah. On the time frame that they're operating on seems impossible to us, but it's just because it's almost like setting something in motion that eventually becomes what you want it to be. That's weird.
Over a large time horizon. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's nuts because they're also, you know, the idea of extraterrestrials or greater purpose aside, there are very few real world precedents for this situation. And this is a situation that affects all of humanity. You could think about the age of sail, right? Maritime exploration.
S-A-I-L. Yeah.
Yes. S-A-I-L. You could also think about the old space race, but even though both of those situations have commonalities, those commonalities are dwarfed by new unknown variables. That leads us to serious, serious problems. Okay. Like you said, Matt, all of this technology is relatively new in the grand scheme of things, so far as we know. And that means legislation is lagging behind. Humanity has, as the Royal Museum's Greenwich put it, humanity has, quote, failed to establish so far a set of universally agreed upon rules to regulate this competition, aka space race. Without laws governing human activity in space, the stage is set for disagreements on, wait for it, an astronomical level. Golf clap. Golf clap, Royal Museum.
Just, man. I can barely contain my golf clap, Ben.
Same, bro. And, you know, of course, we talked about this in the past. There are treaties meant to prevent militarization and war in space. The problem is they have not really ever been put to the test. And it's totally fine for everybody to sign a piece of paper that says, yeah, we're going to like obey these cute little rules until the rubber hits the cosmic road. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I want to give you just a little insight into my ignorance. I didn't know there was a thing called the United Nations Office for Outer Space Affairs.
Mm-hmm. Cool job, right?
What? How often do you have to work? Is it like once a week? No, I'm just joking. There's all kinds of stuff in space.
Mm-hmm. And the Outer Space Treaty is written with the best information they had at hand. It is, you know, like any other UN declaration, it's got some problems, right? And you can criticize any number of things about this agreement. However, we all have to admit it was made in good faith. And the idea was, out of the billions of people on the planet, if we can convince everyone to work together just a little bit, then we might be able to save this species. That's the idea.
And that treaty has been in effect since before Sputnik, when countries were just testing, launching people into orbit, right? Think back to Yuri Gagarin and some of the original activities that man was kind of playing around with up in just low Earth orbit. We've all kind of come together and decided it's a good idea to not have war up there and, you know, and not let it be just another theater of war.
Right. Yeah. It's the new big thing, to the point where, as we'll see, and we're getting to the scary part here, folks, it's to the point where one nation or corporation's dominance over those previously established theaters may be rendered irrelevant if they do not also have capabilities in space. We talked about this again in the past. One of the new goals is to be first to the field on the moon, not counting landing on the moon and taking a cool picture or putting down your flag or whatever, landing on the moon and staying there, establishing a permanent lunar base, because that means you get to set the rules for everybody else who follows. It's like, you know, it's like, let's say you're playing a pickup basketball game or you're playing soccer or something. These forces want to be the person who shows up early, because if they show up early, they can say, we're not playing soccer, we're not playing basketball, we're playing a new game. I invented the rules.
And I've got rail guns set up all around my base. So if you try and do anything, I'm going to take out your little wonky spaceship.
Yes, you set the parameters. This is key, because a dominant power with lunar control can hamstring other nations or companies. They can deny access to lunar resources. They also are in pole position to, as he said, snipe down anything they don't like. This is going to lead to massive tensions. It's already on the way. I mean, could we even call these geopolitical tensions at this point? Are they astropolitical now? I don't know the right word.
I don't know, man. They're GPS, geopolitical shenanigans.
Oh, beautiful. Yes, yes. And whatever we want to call it, the first tensions are going to arise around satellites, defending satellites, tracking satellites, attacking them. Part of most modern countries' early warning systems, virtually all modern countries' early warning systems, are satellites. Satellites help you know if someone is launching a nuke, hopefully in enough time for you to defend yourself or to, at the very least, react accordingly. And if any nation thinks their satellites are being threatened, their chances, their likelihood of taking a preemptive action increase dangerously so. And that's because, like you said, GPS, without our little kawaii boxes in the sky sending out those ones and zeros, international comm networks will not work. Emergency services go kaput. Think about the last time, folks, that you drove any distance and used a physical map. This is Yeah.
Unless you absolutely had to, right? Mm-hmm. Because you didn't have signal or something.
Yeah. Big ships just drift off course and they're forced to resort to old school navigation, astrolabes and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
A country without satellite access is thoroughly disadvantaged in any field of war. And that's the big concern. Will the new space race become a war? I suggest we pause for a word from our sponsors so we can further regale Paul Mission Control with stories about Space Camp.
We teased the war at the last ad break. We promise it's coming.
Yeah, this time for real.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel.
Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI. And Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
So tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
We have returned. Here are the problems. This idea of a space war is a multi-billion dollar question. It should frighten you a little bit because there's nothing really we can do as individuals to prevent the outbreak of this war. We're going to see why, but we're getting some really bad signals from different government space agencies. NASA in particular is super heated up about China. It's like they used to date or something and the relationship didn't end well.
Yeah. We've got a quote here from, I guess, a rep from NASA who had this to say, quote, "China could potentially lay claim to prime resource areas on the moon under the guise of research, potentially barring other countries' access and potentially endangering United States satellites." Here's my response to that. The sentence that came right after that is because that's definitely what we're planning to do. I don't mean that, NASA. I just mean, I feel like whoever gets there first, as we said just before this break, is going to kind of get to dictate some of that stuff, no matter what the treaties say.
Yeah, I think it's a good point, man. We're not being too far off the mark when we say that multiple countries are thinking the same thing. And you can hide a lot under the umbrella of research. Just look at the search history on our work computers.
Yeah. Well, it's just like, I'm not going to run roughshod over the moon if you don't, right? Yeah, no, I'm not going to do that. Sorry, I was looking very intensely at the camera. That to me is what it feels like the main powers are doing.
Bro, I am calm. You calm?
Yeah, yeah. I'm not going to do anything as long as you don't.
I'm not going to do anything as long as you don't.
And then everybody quietly, you know, moves while still staring at each other.
Exactly, yeah. And it's troubling stuff because, you know, for a long time, one really beautiful thing about space exploration is that scientists, taikonauts, cosmonauts, astronauts, they were all above the fray of earthly disagreements, sometimes literally, and they were continuing to collaborate despite whatever territorial tensions might exist. But to certain factions of the United States government and scientific establishments, China is the new adversary. It is the new USSR. That is great for defense funding, but it's not so great for the people who happen to be alive on Earth. I don't know. We also learned that back in the 1990s, U.S. and Western authorities accused China of stealing space technology. And as a result, Uncle Sam passed something called the Wolf Amendment in 2011. This is like big post-breakup energy. The legislation prevents NASA from ever collaborating with China specifically. And there aren't a lot of people in the game at that point. So who else can China work with? If you guessed Russia, congratulations.
Yeah, that's it. Ben, I don't know much about the Wolf Amendment at all. It really is. What was allegedly stolen, or what was the big problem here?
The big problem was technical information that American satellite manufacturers, corporations, may have given up to China.
Got it.
So better know-how regarding the launch of a satellite, the maintenance of it, and one of the very big concerns, again, remember this stuff happens together. One of the big concerns is that knowing how to better launch a satellite also gives you insight on how to better launch missiles.
Got it. Okay.
So it's kind of like nuclear research, you know, the same process you use to make nuclear power is similar to the process you would use to make a nuclear bomb. So it's not an unreasonable concern. It just leads to a rough situation, folks, because China and Russia working together is, for the record, not NASA's dream collaboration. It's not going to be their favorite mixtape. Just earlier this year, Bill Nelson, NASA administrator, put these concerns in pretty blunt terms. He said, quote, "It is a fact. We're in a space race, and it is not beyond the realm of possibility that they," meaning China, "say, keep out. We're here. This is our territory." Nelson goes on to note that he sees an earthly precedent in China's claims around the South China Sea, right? It's considered international water by everybody else except for China.
Yeah, and they defend it with military might, or at least the threat of military might consistently. So I wonder if, I don't know, I actually see that. I really do see that. I wonder what the equivalent argument would be if you were, let's say, in China and then looking at the United States in the same way.
You would probably, if off the top of my head, you might say manifest destiny. Like think of all the agreements that the United States made with indigenous communities and then later broke at their convenience.
Yep. Yep.
And, you know, to be objective and fair, what would stop the United States from doing something very similar on the moon? You know, I don't know if it's convenient to call one side good and one side bad, but they have similar, at times, mutually exclusive goals. So it really depends on where you're standing.
Yeah. Get the helium-3 and make the coolest, scariest space lasers you can imagine.
Mm-hmm. And you can find all sorts of similar statements in Western media, but China itself finds these accusations baseless and biased and unfair. Liu Pingyu, again, pardon our pronunciation here, is the spokesperson for the Chinese embassy in Washington, D.C., or one of the spokespeople, and said the following, quote, outer space is not a wrestling ground. China always advocates the peaceful use of outer space. And China is a signatory to the Outer Space Treaty. But the problem is, the thing that people aren't maybe gaming out far enough in the public sphere is that this is bigger than earthly nations. Tensions are always going to grow between any permanent lunar population and their bosses back on the mud ball, because it doesn't matter if they're countries or corporations. They will be so far away that they are going to want independence. And it wouldn't be surprising, honestly, if in the back rooms of whatever country's equivalent of the RAND organization is, it wouldn't be surprising if they're already planning a way to ensure continued dependence, like how the United Kingdom attempted to control American colonists with mercantilism, right?
Yeah, you're way over there, but you are still beholden to me and you cannot make your own decisions. You must do all that you do for the king.
Mm-hmm. And you can only buy or sell certain things to us. Mm-hmm. They can only be sold to us. And we are the sole provider of the following mission critical resources.
The lifeline, right? How do you actually get supplies on the moon? Well, you can only get them from us. These are the only ones that are certified for use in our lunar facilities.
Mm-hmm. And the problem is, if we again look at the closest thing we have to precedent here, the problem is that both in the age of sail or maritime exploration and the age of colonialism, there was one continual pattern that civilization saw over and over. That attempt to control people doesn't work forever. The history of human exploration is inherently a history of mutiny and rebellion. So why would the age of lunar expansion be any different? I don't know, man. Like, do you want lunar colonists to be self-reliant? They will inevitably become their own nation. That's just what would happen, I think.
Yeah, dude, there's going to be a breakaway country on the moon. Whoa, it's going to happen at some point.
There are a bunch of if-thens to get through, right? Like, first you have to have the base working.
Yeah.
Hmm. I think one of the big problems will be reproduction, honestly. Because a human embryo or fetus developing in lunar gravity is going to have a very different experience to, human developing the old-fashioned way on Earth.
No, sure. We're going to have to find a way to spin the moon effectively enough to where it has centripetal force. No, wait. No, that's not the right term for it. That's moving out. I don't know what the force would be to keep people on the moon. Probably just a type of gravity. But that wouldn't go great for, the old relationship with the Earth and the moon. Wait a second.
Oh, right.
No atmosphere. Going to be locked in these things. I'm thinking back to our conversation with Marshall Brain. He made it seem like, oh, no, it's definitely going to happen on Mars. Like, we're going to Mars. It's going to happen. And this is what it's going to be like. Mm-hmm. And it felt so inspiring. For some reason, it's even harder for me to imagine on the moon. I don't know why.
I guess because we've heard so much about it that we like the rest of the world, already have a bunch of established scenarios in our heads. Right. So the moon is kind of old beans in the world of science fiction. And, I remember talking to people learning about this stuff. And one of the questions they have is, well, why aren't we on the moon yet? It's one of the biggest points raised when you talk about lunar conspiracy theories is, why did the U.S. go all the way out there, put some people on it, bring them back, and just not do anything else?
You know what I always get confused about?
What's that?
It's just because I didn't get far enough in my studies of physics, but the idea that you have to take a ship out, lock it in orbit with the moon, and then send down a smaller fraction of that spaceship as a separate spaceship to land, mm-hmm. and then shoot that back up to get off of the moon. That was always weird to me. It felt like, why don't you build something that can do both? But then you realize, like, impact with the moon with a giant, huge, massive vessel, or even an attempted landing, probably the physics probably don't work out. I'm just not smart enough to understand all of that, or I don't know the formulas. But it feels like in the future, if you've got something that can take off from Earth, land on, like literally itself, land on the moon, and then vice versa, then we're talking.
Then we're talking. Agreed. And that is a game changer. The problem is that these very optimistic scenarios all rely on one idea. And that idea is that any nation or corporation will set aside its beefs and its conflicts to make sure everything else survives in space. Because the truth of the matter is this: should any power conspire to wage war in space, things will escalate super quickly. War in space will inevitably destroy most, if not all, satellites. Here's the way I was thinking about it. Like, so, all right, picture any fantasy or horror story with the undead. One of the problems with fighting the undead is that every time one of your people is killed by a zombie, it reanimates and it starts working for the other side. In this situation, if one person or one force, excuse me, blows up a satellite, shoots it with a bullet, I guess, for the sake of argument, then that satellite is like a zombie. It becomes a source of new bullets, and they're just flying around. You can try to predict them, but you probably won't be able to get all of your stuff out of the way. So imagine a gun that turns the people you shoot into guns of their own.
Whoa. Yeah, and then good luck launching anything out of that debris field.
Oh, yeah. No, terrible, terrible. And all it will take, it's such a razor's edge. All it will take is one side choosing to target satellites. To date, both China and the U.S. have proven they can shoot down satellites. They shot down their own, because to shoot down another entity's satellite is, you know, tantamount to a war declaration.
It's frowned upon.
It's frowned. It's not a good look, you know? And so if one side decided we're going to start targeting satellites, other players in the game will be forced to respond with similar tactics. And many satellites can be weaponized to some degree, even if it's just turning them into dumb kinetic impact agents. And you raise one of the most dangerous points there, man. Earth's orbital environment would become useless and impassable. And this would sow absolute chaos on the ground. You don't care about space? Too bad, because what happens in space affects all of what happens on the planet. We're talking a situation where, at the worst, civilization is pushed back decades in terms of innovation. You know, it's like a, it's like we're being pushed down the stairs.
Ooh, of time.
Of time, time, time. And, you know, this means we might be looking at an era of mutually assured destruction. Either way, humanity is definitely at a dangerous crossroads. It just seems so classic human to get to the edge of a real space age and then totter backwards into the dark ages.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about space nukes yet.
No.
That's all the mad together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's the question. What would you do? And folks, we don't know the answer. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Fellow conspiracy realists, what would you do if you were in a position of power? Would you be able to set aside earthly squabbles for the greater good of human expansion into the stars? Or would you make the call to burn it all down and rule over whatever wreckage remains?
Man. Yeah. What do you think? Go ahead and write to us. Find us on social media. We're all over the place. Conspiracy Stuff on YouTube. Also Conspiracy Stuff on X/ the old Twitter machine. What's the other thing that we're Conspiracy Stuff on, Ben? Facebook.
Facebook. Here's where it gets crazy. Our Facebook page, drop by and just soak in the memes. And if you don't sip the social meads, if you're not a meme enthusiast, but you have a story to tell, never fear. You can contact us directly on our telephone line. Say it together. Play along at home. 1-833-STDWYTK. You'll hear a voice and then a beep. That beep is like the gun that fires at the beginning of a race. You got 3 minutes. Those 3 minutes are yours. Tell us what's on your mind. Give yourself a cool nickname. Let us know if we can use your name and or message on the air. Most importantly, don't censor yourself. If you have a story that needs more than 3 minutes, if you have additional photos or sources that you would like to share with us, take us to the edge of the rabbit hole. We will do the rest. We read every single email we get. All you have to do is drop us a line at our good old-fashioned address where we are.
Conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com. Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Dealing with pests can be a pain, but relax. Terminix can help.
Because when pests show up, so does Terminix.
With over 95 years of experience, they have what it takes to take on any pest problem fast.
If your home or business has pests, don't stress it.
Terminix it.
Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today.
That's TERMINIX.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.